Last week, I went to a fine restaurant, sat down and had dinner with my lovely wife. Earlier in the week, I went to a department store, tried on some pants, but I couldn't find anything that fit me. Last year, I went to a conference and stayed at a nice hotel, and nobody batted an eye. Well, this is 2016, but if it had been, say, 1956, which is within my lifetime, depending on where I was in the United States, I could not have done any of those things. That is because of segregation, which was everywhere in the U.S., more or less, legal or just by custom. There were so many restrictions on where I could live, work, go to school, shop, play in vacation, vote, even use a restroom. It was understood that whites should not have to associate with blacks on an equal level. That is because blacks, African Americans, Negroes as we were then, were thought to be inferior to whites, Caucasians. That we had lower intelligence, that we were not as smart, was understood, a given. But we were also considered immoral, could not be trusted to live by society's rules. We were dirty, unclean, crude, even primitive. In short, blacks were not fit to associate in an equal way with good, decent, regular, read, white people. And whites even tried to prove this inferiority scientifically with the eugenics movement of the late 1800s and many more. But that was then. Things have changed since then. First and foremost, there was the civil rights movement of the 1960s that ended legal segregation nationwide. That led to much progress in racial relations, and now we are not surprised to see black people everywhere, where we live, work, shop, play, on TV, even our elected officials. Yes, we have an African-American president of the United States. What a great day that was when Barack Obama was elected president in 2008. I was at the victory party at the Renaissance Hotel downtown. Saw a few of you there. There was so much joy and elation and electricity in the room, I felt lifted off my feet. And of all the things people were excited about, one big one was that it seemed like we had turned a corner on race relations in this country. Many went so far as to declare that racism was over. After all, we had just elected a black man as president. We were now in a post-racial society. Racism was solved, conquered, ended. We didn't have to deal with it anymore. Thank heavens. Well, not so fast. There have been many incidences that have brought race to the forefront of the national conversation since Obama's election 8 years ago. That is a long list, and there's so much to say about all that that I cannot possibly cover everything here today. So if I don't touch on something you want to hear about, well, we'll save that for the next time. Today, I want to focus on two big things, two series of current events that give insight into the real thinking of many Americans about race today. One is the presidential campaign of Donald Trump. The other is the death of African-American men at the hands of the police. Republican candidate Donald Trump began his presidential bid with an indictment against Mexican immigrants. He now famously called them criminals, drug dealers, and rapists. We thought this would kill his campaign right out of the gate. Wrong. He shot to the top of the field of Republican candidates with this rhetoric and has been there ever since. Now he is the Republican nominee. Later, after the San Bernardino killings, he suggested a ban on all Muslims entering the country. And when his businesses were being investigated, he said that Judge Gonzalo Curiel could not be fair because he was a Mexican. Many people, including those in the Republican Party, criticized these comments, especially the ones about the judge, who, by the way, was born in Indiana. Trump has condemned whole nationalities, races, cultures, and religions of people time after time. And he's also attacked women, the disabled, and even President Obama. Remember, Trump was an original birther. Now, I am not so concerned about one person saying these things as I am about the millions of people who agree with him, who support these ideas, who believe them, and who voted for them. They cheered Trump. They applauded his not being politically correct. They were ready to hear and receive his bigotry and xenophobia, unfazed by the hatred involved. I believe they were ready all along. It was their thinking, too. The other series of events to which I want to bear witness are the many high-profile cases of black men dying at the hands of police. They were killed almost exclusively by white policemen. Many of the black men were unarmed, and when they did have a gun, they had a legal permit for it and were not confrontational with it. Because these incidences illustrate what I'm talking about today, I must present a short list that have made national headlines from just the past few years, in no particular order. Walter Scott, shot in the back by police while running away, North Charleston, South Carolina. Tamir Rice, shot by police immediately upon their arrival, though he had a fake gun, was only 12 years old, Cleveland, Ohio. Freddie Gray, killed in police custody while being given a rough ride in a police van, Baltimore, Maryland. Michael Brown, unarmed, shot by police and left dead lying in the street for 4 hours, Ferguson, Missouri. Laquan McDonald, unarmed, shot 16 times, a full clip, while walking down the street, Chicago, Illinois. Trayvon Martin, unarmed, shot not by police, but by a vigilante community patrol person, Sanford, Florida. Eric Garner, unarmed, choked to death after crying, "I can't breathe," by New York City police. Philando Castile, armed and with a license, shot in his car while reaching for his wallet, St. Paul, Minnesota. Alton Sterling, armed and with a license, shot a point-blank range while being held down by two policemen, Baton Rouge, Louisiana. Henry Green V, armed and with a license, shot by two plainclothes policemen who did not identify themselves, Columbus, Ohio. I would like to point out that these incidences happened all over the country, not just in one city, state, or region. And African Americans know that there have been many more such incidences throughout modern American history that did not receive national attention because there was no video or social media to broadcast it. Why did these men have to die? Why have white police officers felt they had to shoot or cause the death of unarmed, non-confrontational black men? I believe it is because of the way that they and many white people think about blacks, especially black men. Take a moment to review that list I presented earlier of undesirable traits attributed to blacks from the past. Add to them this updated list from the present. Black men are considered inherently more aggressive, violent, criminal, dangerous, hostile, belligerent, savage, uncontrollable, just actually uncivilized than whites. And whereas many of these traits may be rewarded on the football field, they make white officers afraid for their lives without further provocation. We recently saw a video from a year ago when a black woman was thrown to the ground by a white police officer after a traffic stop in Austin, Texas. When the woman asked why this happened to her, the other white officer there told her that black people have violent tendencies and that whites were justifiably afraid of them. This thinking goes by the common term of profiling. Those officers had an idea of who a dangerous criminal was, and it is a black man. African Americans know that these incidences would not have happened if those men had been white. And they're not the only ones. This is from a Washington Post story. Following a fatal police shooting in a quiet suburb that rapidly rippled across the nation, Minnesota Governor Mark Dayton said in no uncertain terms Thursday that Philando Castile ended up dead, at least in part, because he was black. Quote, "Would this have happened if those passengers, the driver and the passengers, were white?" Dayton said a day and a half after Castile was killed. "I don't think it would have. I think all of us in Minnesota are forced to confront that this kind of racism exists." The article continues, "It was a forceful declaration from the white governor of a mostly white Midwestern state almost 2 years after a white police officer killed Michael Brown, an unarmed black teen, in Ferguson, Missouri. These white officers did more than just shoot those men. In the words of Tavis Smiley, they robbed them of their humanity. Those black men, like so many others, were reduced to something less than human, more like a wild animal. As we here might say, these men were denied the number one principle of Unitarian Universalism, the inherent worth and dignity of every person. Their lives did not matter. I do not think this profiling is taught directly at police academy, but it is handed down, person to person, old to young. And studies have shown that much of the white population shares this idea of the profile of black men. It seems that much of the thinking of the old days of 1956 and 1926 and 1906 and before is still with us today. As the French say, the more things change, the more they stay the same. And I can understand why that might be. Even in 2016, there's much segregation in the United States. Most white people have little direct contact with more than a handful of black people. Pretty much what they know of African Americans is what they see on TV or in the movies or in the news. As a member of several musical organizations, I have occasion to perform in many different towns and churches and venues all over Ohio. And I am constantly amazed at how homogeneous they are. Most of them are all white. It is not unusual at all for me to be the only person of color there, sometimes among hundreds of people. Now, I'm used to it, not threatened by it, but it does point out how separated we are still as a nation. We don't know each other. And that makes it easy for stereotypes to be perpetuated. Question: are they racist? Are the police who committed these offenses and those who agree with and support them and the millions of people who agree with and support Donald Trump, are they all racist? Maybe it depends on your definition of racist. African Americans in general don't have any problem calling out racism. For many whites, however, the only people they are ready to put into that category are Ku Klux Klan, neo-Nazis, skinheads, Aryan Nation, and the like. For all others, they'll give them a pass. How many times have you heard persons say, "I am not a racist," and most other whites accept it without question? Doonesbury just did a strip on this very thing a week ago. When Donald Trump was in a dispute with Judge Curiel over his businesses, he said the judge could not be fair because he was Mexican, and Trump was going to build a wall to keep Mexicans out. So, of course, the judge hated him. Many in his own party, including Speaker Paul Ryan, said that this talk was racist. However, everyone declined to say Trump himself was a racist. So, can you think and say racist ideas without being a racist? I personally am not interested in labeling millions of my fellow Americans as racist. But race is a large and undeniable factor in all the acts and incidences I have mentioned here. Racial prejudice, profiling, and stereotyping are still a problem and cannot be denied or ignored any longer. Well, what do we do now? I have exposed this deep, ugly truth, so what now? Sorry to say, I cannot tell you how to end racism. But what we need is to change a way of thinking in this country. It happened once during the Civil Rights era, when we went from clear segregation to the type of integration we see today nationwide. As I said before, I can go anywhere today. But now we need to go deeper if we are going to root out the syndrome I have just described, the one that results in the death of unarmed black men and a wave of anti-immigrant, anti-Muslim sentiment. The only way I know to do that is to talk about it. It is pretty well acknowledged that the first step to solving any problem is to first admit that there is a problem. So we have to talk about this. I know it's not easy. Most white people are uncomfortable talking about race. By the way, black people talk about it all the time. But this is where we must start. Talk about these racial situations with your family and friends. Talk about what you have seen, what you think and feel. Ask what they think and feel. Get specific. Talk to the young, who are just forming their ideas, and to the old, whose ideas may be stuck in the past, see above. You may be surprised what you'll learn. And mostly, talk to help figure out and define and refine your own ideas. What do you think about all this? What does your family think? In the discussion of race, I am always concerned with raising awareness. The racial climate can never improve if the problem stays buried. It's tough work, but we can do it. And it's okay to talk separately. That is, whites have to talk to whites and blacks have to talk to blacks. Neither group wants the other one lecturing them. White people will more readily listen to other whites about race rather than hearing blacks make them feel guilty about oppression, privilege, and white racism. And I know blacks are tired of whites telling them they're wrong. They should think and act differently, you know, more like whites. But no matter how, we have to talk. And the church can be a leader here, for it is in church where we, as a people, discuss how we live together and regard each other, all churches. So if you want to delve into this awkward subject, church is a good place to start, and you'll not be alone. Many are already talking about it. The best known forum today is the Black Lives Matter movement. If you went to GA, you know that the UU Church is very involved with Black Lives Matter. There is even a link to it on our UUA website. A lot of good ideas there about how to approach the subject and what to do. Another organization you may find particularly relevant is the Catalyst Project, wide allies of people of color in the struggle for equality. They're very active. They've even done workshops here. There's the Central Ohio Racial Justice Workshop. Reverend Lane Campbell has organized several meetings here at First UU to discuss racial issues. There was the stakeholders meeting on racial justice, race and justice and honest conversation, a large meeting that included many community members, and showing up for racial justice all this spring. There are many more such discussions, organizations, meetings, locally, nationally, too many to name here. But people are working on this problem and talking about it. I hope you will join in the conversation about race, the conversation so many say we need to have. Warren Christopher was Secretary of State under President Bill Clinton. Before that, he was Undersecretary of State and the chief negotiator for getting the hostages out of Iran under President Jimmy Carter. He also helped broker the Bosnian peace agreement for President Clinton. I saw him give a commencement speech at Stanford University once, and he said the key to international diplomacy and negotiations, the one thing that was most important, was to keep talking. Yes, don't be afraid. Keep talking.